ॐ सहनौ भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Very good. Welcome back. We are, I think, ready to complete our study of chapter 3. We'll begin, as always, with some chanting at the end of chapter 3, starting with verse 34. Repeat after me, please.
Indriyasyendriyasyarte, indriyasyendriya, ragadveshavyavasthitau, ragadveshav, tayornavashamagachet, tayornavashamagachet, Tau hyasya paripantinau, tau hyasya pari. Shreyan sudharmo vigunaha, shreyan sudhar. Bharadharmat swanushtitat, paradharmat. Sudharme nidhanam shreyaha, sudharme. Paradharmo bhayavaha, paradharmo bhaya. Arjuna vacha, hata kena prayukto yam, hata kena prayukto yam, papam charati purushaha, papam charati, anichannapi varshneya, anichannapi, balarivani yojataha, balarivani, Shri Bhagavanu vacha, Shri Kamahesha krodhahesha, kamahesha. Rajoguna samudbhavaha, rajoguna sam. Mahashano mahapapma, mahashano. Vidhyenamiha vairinam, vidhyenamiha. Dhume navriyate vanhir, dhume navriyate. Yatha darsho malena cha, yatha darsho. Yatol ben avrito garbhas, yatol ben. Tatate nedam avritam, tatate nedam. Avritam jnanam etena, jnavritam jnanam. Jnanino nitya vairina, jnanino nitya vai. Kama rupena kaunteya, kama rupena. Dushpurenana lena cha, dushpurenana. Indrihani mano buddhir, indrihani man. Asyadhishthana muchyate, asyadhishthana. Hetar vimohayat yesha, hetar vimosha. Jnanamavritya dehinam, jnanamavritya. Tasmat tvam indriyan yadau, tasmat tvam indriyan. Niyamya bharatarshabha, papmanam prajahi hyenam, papmanam. Jnanavijnana nashanam, jnanavijnana. Indrihani paranyahur, indrihani para, indriyebhyah param manaha, indriyebhyah param. Manasastu para buddhir, manasastu para. Yo buddheh paratastu saha, yo buddheh paratas. Evam buddheh param buddhva, evam buddheh param. Samstabhyatmanam atmana, samstabhyatmanam. Jahi shatrum mahabaho, jahi shatrum. Kamarupam durasaram, kamarupam durasaram. Good.
And that is the last verse of chapter 3. All right, before we return to the text, there's one question that came connected to our prior discussion about the word kama And the question is, I seem to be confused. Are there multiple meanings for the word kama? And she points out that we've talked about kama as one of the four purusharthas, one of the four fundamental goals of life, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And then what do we see? Kama esha, krodha esha. We saw that this is the enemy. Kama is the enemy. So in one context, in the Vedic expression of the four purusharthas, kama is called a legitimate goal of life. And then several verses ago, Sri Krishna says it's your enemy. Which is it? Both? In our own experience, kama is both a legitimate goal of life and an enemy. Both are true. And perhaps pointing to different meanings of the word kama, different applications of the word. Every word in every language has multiple meanings, including kama. So in the context of the four purusharthas, the four goals of life, kama refers to the fact that Bhagavan has given us this wonderful world in which to live, and we're meant to enjoy the blessings Bhagavan has given us as long as we do so without transgressing the boundaries of Dharma. So to pursue enjoyment in life without transgressing the bounds of Dharma is appropriate and normal, and that's the context of kama as a purusharta. But then our recent discussion has not been about that, but kama as an inner force compelling us to act contrary to Dharma. Well, that's kind of the opposite of what we just said. Kama as a purusharta means pursuing pleasure in life without violating laws of Dharma. But then kama, as we've discussed here in chapter 3, refers to the power of desire to impel our behavior, compel our behavior in ways that cause us to act against Dharma. So these are obviously very distinctly different perspectives on kama. But it can be confusing for many, the fact that different words are used in different contexts with different meanings. Even the word dharma, you're probably used to a kind of a limited meaning, but in commentaries, you'll see expressions talking about jalasya dharmam shitalam, that the nature of water is to be cold. Dharma can be used in the sense of nature of something, the quality of something, essential nature of something. Just be prepared for multiple meanings of various words. Okay, so with that question then, if we can return to our topic. We have just four verses left, but in order to properly understand those verses, it would be nice to pick up the thread by looking at verse 39. We finished verse 39 in our last class. We'll continue in a moment with verse 40. But just to set the context, where Sri Krishna says here, avritam jnanam etena, one's knowledge, jnanam, one's wisdom, one's proper thinking and understanding, becomes avritam, covered over, etena, by this. Our thinking becomes overwhelmed by what? What is it that wells up inside of us and compels us to act against Dharma? That was our discussion in the last class, and we spoke of the whole context here. The first layer of meaning is kama and krodha. Due to desire, first comes desire, and then desire leads to anger. We said when desire is obstructed in any way, it leads to anger and frustration. And etena, by this kama and krodha, our thinking gets distorted. It sounds pretty familiar for most people. We've all had times when we've been caught up in an emotional reaction, and you know how powerful those emotional reactions can be. And that's exactly what Sri Krishna is referring to here. The power of kama to the power of kama to pervert our thinking. a strong word for in an appropriate context. It really does completely distort our thinking to such an extent that it can lead a good person to do a really harmful adharmic act. That is the power of kama. We also discussed that kama has a root cause. Kama is a cause. The cause for our bad behavior is indeed kama. But kama itself has a cause. And if you remember from our discussion last week, the root cause of kama is avidya, ignorance, ajnana. And the reasoning is so simple. If you knew yourself to be full and complete, if you knew your true nature to be Satchidananda, Atma, limitless, boundaryless, a vast reservoir of love and contentment, if you discovered that and saw it vividly, would you experience compelling desires? Impossible, right? In the presence of that discovery of the fullness of your true nature, recognizing that fullness, it's not possible to have compelling desires. It's possible to have the other desires which are not compelling, the trivial ones. Like when somebody asks, do you want coffee or tea? And you say, oh, I have no compelling desires. This is not a matter of compelling desires. You want coffee or do you want tea? It's a very simple question. That kind of desire is harmless. We can even call it a preference, or as we mentioned before, my guru likes to use this language. He'll distinguish it two ways of comparing these two kinds of desires. We can call one a preference and the other desire. That's one way. They're both kama. Kama can be a preference. Kama can be a compelling desire. Then we can also use my guru's language, which is to differentiate between non-binding and binding desires. Both are kama. A binding desire is one whose non-fulfillment makes you upset, gives rise to anger. So that's a binding desire. Non-binding desire is a desire whose non-fulfillment doesn't cause a problem. For example, you ask, can I have some coffee? I'm sorry, we don't have any coffee. Would you like some tea? Sure. So that's an example of a non-binding desire. Both are kama. One is binding, the other is non-binding. Okay, with that introduction, we can return to our last four verses.
Indrihani mano buddhir, indrihani mano asyadishthanam uchyate, asyadishthanam etar vimohayat yesha, etar vimoshay jnanam avritya dehinam, jnanam avritya dehinam.
Asya adishthanam. Adishthanam is the basis, the locus. If kama is the enemy, kama born of avidya, desire born of ignorance, is the enemy, we should know where the enemy lies, right? If you were a military person, you better know where your enemy is on the battlefield. Or in a more common sense, if you're a surgeon, you better know where the tumor is before going into the operating theater. You should know the locus of the problem. Here in Vedanta, we're dealing with the problem of suffering. And the cause for suffering, as we've been discussing, is avidya and kama, ignorance and desire. We should know where is the locus of the problem so that we can address it properly. Adishthanam means locus, where it's located. Asya adishthanam, the locus of this problem, uchyate, is said to be what? Indriyani, the senses, sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. Manas, mind, and buddhihi, intellect. The senses, mind, and intellect, these are all mental capacities. These form the locus of the problem. By the way, when the word indriya is said here, it's not talking about eyeballs and ears. It's talking about the power of seeing and hearing, which is clearly a mental power. It's in your mind. the power of hearing. Ears are part of the mechanism, but the actual power of hearing, the ability to discern sounds and understand sounds. You're hearing my voice. Your ear perhaps is picking up. You notice how God gave us these nice funnels? And not accidental. So we have an anatomy well suited to pick up sounds, but you're not just hearing sounds coming out of my voice. You're hearing words. Your ears only hear sounds. Where did the words come from? This is what we mean. This is a mental power, mental capacity. So in that sense, indriyas. So indriyani, the senses, manas, mind, and buddhi, intellect, these three form the adhishtana, the locus of the problem. And wherever is the locus of the problem, that's where you apply the solution. So if the tumor is in the stomach, the operation should address the stomach area. Here, if the problem of kama and avidya is in the mind, intellect, and senses, that's where we address it. Some people... Just a quick observation. Some people complain, oh, this Vedanta stuff is so intellectual. Okay, that's a common argument, common complaint. All these Vedantic teachings, it's so intellectual. Tell me, where does ignorance exist? The ignorance which gives rise to kama. Where does it exist? If it existed in your little finger, that's where you should address it. But it happens that ignorance is in your mind, in particular in your intellect, right? Non-recognition of your true nature will take place in your intellect. Therefore, non-recognition of your true nature, ignorance, is in your intellect. So if the problem lies in the intellect, why should we not use an intellectual teaching to address it? How appropriate. Kantakena kantakam. This is the typical metaphor that they use. If you have I gave this several classes ago. If you have a thorn in your foot, kanta, how do you get that thorn out? Bearing in mind, in ancient India, they didn't have metal tweezers. So you get out that thorn, you pick up another thorn, and you use that thorn to dig the first thorn out of your foot. Kantakena, with a thorn, kantakam, a thorn is removed. In the same way, a problem whose locus is in the intellect is addressed with intellectual means. Intellectual means sounds too fancy. The problem, how simple can it be? The problem is ignorance. The solution is knowledge. Just a funny observation. Most of you have understood that according to the teachings of Vedanta, the fundamental problem of life is ignorance. And not any kind of ignorance, but rather ignorance of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, failure to recognize yourself as being full and complete, that inner divinity. So if the problem is ignorance, the solution should be knowledge. But notice how conventional life works. The problem is ignorance. What is the solution? I need a new car. The problem is ignorance. I need a better paying job. The problem is ignorance. No, the problem is my mother-in-law. All of this is just nonsense because ultimately and fundamentally the problem indeed is ignorance. Okay, let's return to our verse. So the adhishtanam, the abode or the locus of the problem of ignorance and desire is in the mind, intellect, and senses. Etaihi vimohayati eshaha. Eshaha, this one. This one what? Kama born of avidya. Desire born of ignorance. Eshaha, this one. Vimohayati causes confusion. Causes confusion for what? Etaihi, for these three, for the mind, intellect, and senses. Kama born of avidya causes confusion. How? Jnanam avritya dehinam. For by avritya, having covered, having overpowered the jnanam, the wisdom, dehinam, for a person. So overwhelming a person's understanding, and let's be clear about it. These terms are a little bit abstract. Be very clear. You know what is right and wrong. We all know what is dharma and adharma. But when we are caught up in a huge emotional reaction, when jnanam avritya, when our understanding of dharma and adharma gets overwhelmed by kama and krodha, what happens to our understanding of dharma and adharma? It seems to be set aside. That's exactly what's being described in this verse. So our ordinary understanding of dharma and adharma is obliterated, as it were, in the presence of a powerful, compelling desire. Therefore, we've seen in prior verses, well, let's say again. So in two prior verses, desire was called the enemy. And now we see why. It's an enemy because, in fact, it's enemy number one. Nothing in the world has more power to destroy our lives than desire. It's true, isn't it? Think about, you know, in a newspaper, you see of big people who get into trouble. Politicians who accept bribes, people who get into illicit sexual activities, or gurus who get into some problem or another. And getting into some problem in the sense of destroying their lives. A politician who, in India, you accept a bribe, and that's normal, I suppose. But in this country, you accept a bribe, you go to jail. And that's a good thing. Accept a bribe, get caught, go to jail. That's exactly the way it should work. So look at this. The politician's life gets destroyed by what? Kama. Or a person, especially a public figure who gets involved in some wrong sexual activity, their lives are destroyed. Not just their lives, sadly. Somebody else's life can also be destroyed by what? By desire. It would seem that there's nothing else in life that has more power to destroy our lives. Is that enough to call it an enemy? The number one enemy, and to make matters worse, this enemy is not outside. If the enemy is your mother-in-law, at least you can go someplace else. Here, the enemy is inside of you. This is why there's so much attention at the end of chapter 3 to this enemy called desire. Okay. Then. Tasmat tvam hindriyanyadao, tasmat tvam indriyanya, niyamya bharatarshabha, niyamya papmanam prajahi hyenam, papmanam prajahi hyenam, jnana vijnana nashanam, jnana vijnana. Tasmat, therefore meaning having recognized that this desire born of ignorance is the biggest enemy we will ever face in life, what should we do? Adao, at the very beginning, niyamya, having controlled what? Indriyani, having controlled the senses. Adao, at the beginning. This needs a little bit of explanation. Prior verse, we said the adhishtanam, the locus, was threefold. Senses, mind, and intellect. But here in this verse, it only makes reference to senses. I should mention that senses can include not merely our five jnanendriyas, not merely our five senses like sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. But indriyas can include karmendriyas, organs of action, like the power of grasping, power of walking, power of talking. These are also called indriyas. The first five are jnanendriyas, organs of knowledge, but then we also have karmendriyas, organs of action. And that must be included with the indriyas, because in this verse it says, these indriyani niyamya, having controlled them, adau, at the first. What are we talking about? We're talking about how to address the problem of desire. We've already observed that the problem is not outside, problem is inside. Fine. So kama is an enemy inside of you. So if I tell you, destroy that enemy, in the last verse, Sri Krishna is going to say, jahi shatrum, cast that enemy out. Jahi shatrum. We'll see that in just a few minutes. So if I tell you, kama is your biggest enemy. That enemy is inside of you. Get rid of it. How would you say? It's fengto. It's ko fengto. Throw it out. Bahar fengto. How? What? Tell me what you'll do. Throw it out. If you eat some bad food, there's a way of throwing it out. Sorry, I don't want to get too graphic here. So if you eat some bad food, you can take that stuff out. Here, the enemy is not what's in your stomach. The enemy is what's in your mind and intellect. Think though. Throw it out. How? How will you do that? There's a process of dealing with it, but it's not so simple as grabbing something and throwing it out. There's a process. What is that process? This verse and the next verse is describing that process. There should be an adi, a beginning for the process. And so here, adau, at the beginning, the first part of the process is what? Indriyani niyamya. Bring your senses under control. That's the first step of the process of getting rid of overcoming the enemy of desire. How does it work? If you can't directly deal with a desire, you had better prevent the desire from causing acts of adharma. Because that's what happens. We said, kama leads to, in fact, we need to get some of this up on the board. You see two sequences. Would you turn the light on, please? Thank you. So the first sequence we've seen is how the root cause of avidya, ignorance, failing to recognize the fullness and completeness of your true self, that will naturally lead to kama. If you see yourself as incomplete, imperfect, wanting, and limited, you'll definitely end up with desires for other things. Desire, of course, are usually obstructed, leading to krodha. And when you are overcome by desire and anger, acts of adharma are inevitable. Our thinking gets overwhelmed, distorted, perverted, as I suggested, and we are driven to do wrong things. How to prevent all of this? So he says, adau, at the beginning, indriyani niyamya. Begin by controlling the organs of action. Not just organs of action, our senses are that which connects us to the world outside, which means sight, hearing, taste, smell, touch, also our powers of talking, of grasping, of walking, etc., all of these karmendriyas. We control them at first. Why? Because that's how we commit acts of adharma. With our hands, with our mouths, how many wrong things can we say, hurtful things we can say? Chances are we're not likely to use, how would you use your hands to commit an act of adharma? Several ways. One would be taking something that doesn't belong to you. Probably you're not likely to do that. Another way of using that hand to commit an act of a dharma, which you're also not likely to do, is to clobber someone. So these would be ways of using your hand to commit acts of a dharma. Control it. Control those indriyas. That's what this verse is saying. Indriyani niyamya, controlling those. But the fact of the matter is, the indriyas that we're most likely to use to cause harm to others, this one. By the way, in modern times, this one includes whatever you say. If you say it verbally or if you say it in an email or a text message, it's all the same. Any kind of expression. Indriyani niyamya. Adau. At the beginning, you control. But at the beginning means it's step one. Because after controlling the senses, then we have to learn to control our minds. And we're going to see this in the next verse, but I'll just get it up here. And then buddhi. And then finally, to get rid of the ignorance. I'll explain this. In fact, we can just tie this right here. And that connects nicely. I hadn't planned this, but I'll explain these connections with the next verse. So the point is, adau, initially you restrain the senses because that's the most direct way of preventing an act of adharma. But we're going to see that that's how we begin. That's not where we end. That's where the process begins. The process of getting rid of that enemy of desire. So, where are we? Tasmat, Twam, you, Bharatarshaba, O Arjuna, O mighty Arjuna, Twam, you, Indriyani Niyamya, controlling your senses, Adau, at the beginning, Papmanam Prajahi Hyenam, he indeed, Enam, this one, this what? This kama, this desire, or desire born of ignorance, Prajahi, thank though, cast that one out. Why? That one is the papmanam. This is brilliant. You may take this for granted. The sinner is kama, born of avidya. You are not the sinner. You are not a sinner. You are incapable of committing sin because you are Satchidananda Atma. You are incapable. As Satchidananda Atma, you are incapable of committing an act of a dharma. You are incapable of sinning. Who is the sinner? Desire born of ignorance. That is the papmanam. That one is the sinner. Prajahi, cast that one out. That one which is jnana, vijnana, nashanam. That one that destroys, that overcomes jnana and vijnana. Jnana, wisdom, and vijnana can also be translated as wisdom. So what do these two terms mean? Well, it's a good time to consult a commentary. Here's Sri Shankara's commentary. He says, jnana vijnana nashanam. What does that mean? Jnanam means shastrataha acharyataha cha atma adinam avabodaha. Jnanam here means knowledge of avabodha, knowledge of your true self, which comes from the scriptures and the teacher. Exactly what Sri Krishna, Sri Shankaracharya says here. So, jnanam, knowledge of your true self, born of the scriptures, that comes from the scriptures and the teachers, that is jnanam. That jnanam is overwhelmed by kama, born of ignorance. And then what is vijnanam? Vijnanam visheshataha tad anubhavaha. It's visheshataha jnanam. It's a special kind of knowledge. What kind of knowledge is it? Anubhavaha. It's a knowledge related to your experience. It's a knowledge that's not intellectual or abstract, but a knowledge that's completely connected and assimilated, connected to your experiences, vijnana. So jnana, your knowledge of your true self, and vijnana, assimilation of that knowledge, is nashana, is destroyed by the enemy called kama. This is, what do they call it? Public enemy number one. The FBI has a list, you know that. So if we had our list, actually this is a little bit tricky. What would be public enemy number one on the list if you really follow this discussion thoroughly to the end? Public enemy number one. Public enemy number two is kama. Public enemy number three, krodha. You can see the chart. Public enemy number one is the root cause of vidya. Okay. Indrihani paranyahur, indrihani paranyahur, indriyebhya param manaha, indriyebhya param manasastu para buddhir, manasastu para yo buddhe paratastu saha, yo buddhe. Good. Indriyani parani ahuhu. Ahuhu, they say that indriyani, the senses, and the senses will include now the jnanendriyas, the organs of knowledge, and karmendriyas, the organs of action. All of these are parani. They're very elevated, they're lofty, they're powerful, they're up there, as we say in American English. They're up there. On the other hand, indriyebhyaha paramanaha. There's something which is above or more powerful than the indriyas. Indriyebhyaha, more powerful than the indriyas, is the manaha, the mind. The indriyas are powerful, but the mind is more powerful. The mind, by the way, is the locus of your emotions. So when your mind is freed from emotional coloration, then your mind is able to direct your senses to do the right thing. It's only when the mind is overcome by emotions that the senses are left to do the wrong thing. So the senses are powerful, but the mind is more powerful than the senses, and manasaha too. But on the other hand, more powerful, para manaha, more powerful than the mind is the buddhi, is the intellect. So this is why I wrote that other list up here. So we saw that control of indriyas was step one, so that at least we're not committing acts of adharma. But eventually, we don't want to constantly struggle and fight with our indriyas. We want to remove the cause for their misbehavior. Can we say that? So our indriyas misbehave. What a nice way of putting it. Our mouths misbehave. Our typing misbehaves. Can tell someone, don't blame me, my mouth just misbehaved. They probably won't accept that, but that's our argument right here. So instead of dealing with the misbehavior of our bodies, of our senses, of our organs of action, for example, why not deal with the emotions? Manas is the locus of emotion. Mind is the abode of the emotions. So why not deal with the emotions if the krodha and other emotions weren't bubbling up so much, there wouldn't be a problem. So then that's why Sri Krishna says that the mind is more powerful than the indriyas. And then further, he says buddhi is more powerful than the mind. In what sense? Buddhi is intellect. Can you use your intellect to get rid of emotions? So if you have anger, you're angry at someone. And then you say, wait a minute, Sri Krishna in chapter 3 said we shouldn't be angry. I shouldn't be angry. So you're angry. You tell yourself, don't be angry. Anger is in your manas, emotion. Buddhi says, don't be angry. Does that work? In fact, you get more angry. You get irritated with yourself for being angry in the first place. So the issue now is, in what sense is the buddhi more powerful than the manas if we admit that the buddhi cannot in and of itself get rid of that anger, the anger in the manas, which can lead to the wrong behavior? In what sense is the buddhi more powerful? The buddhi is the one capable of discovering your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. Your buddhi is the one capable of destroying avidya. This is it. Look at the connections. Your indriyas are capable of acts of adharma, so you better control them. But better than controlling your indriya is to control your mind, your emotions, because your mind gives rise to kama and krodha. If you can control those emotions completely, if you can remove those emotions, then you won't have the kama and krodha. But how will you do that? By using that which is more powerful than your mind. That's what the verse says, manasastu para buddhihi. You use that which is more powerful than your mind. How is buddhi more powerful? Only your buddhi can destroy avidya, the root cause for all of this. To recognize your true nature as Satchidananda Atma requires the intellect. I remember my guru lamenting this point. He said, everyone calls it, he says, people complain to him, oh, this is only intellectual knowledge. He complained. He said, people complain to him, oh, this knowledge is intellectual. And then he responded by saying, what other kind of knowledge is there? His exact words are, is there such a thing as nasal knowledge? Knowledge is in the intellect. What can you do? Ignorance is in the intellect. Is there nasal ignorance? There's no nasal ignorance, therefore no nasal knowledge. Ignorance, the ignorance which is the root cause for kama, which leads to krodha, which leads to acts of adharma, the root cause happens to lie in your intellect. So therefore the solution must be via the intellect, which means knowledge takes place in the buddhi. That knowledge makes you discover your true nature as being full and complete. You discover that vast reservoir of contentment and kindness within you. And in the absence of avidya, no kama. In the absence of kama, no krodha. In the absence of krodha, no acts of adharma. All right. So to finish this, so we saw the senses are powerful, but more powerful than the senses are the mind. More powerful than the mind is the buddhi. Yo buddhehe paratahatu saha. Yaha saha. Buddhehe parataha. That which is more powerful than the intellect. So we're seeing a sequence. More powerful than the senses is the mind. More powerful than the mind is the intellect. More powerful than the buddhi? Ignorance is in the buddhi. What is more powerful than the ignorance in the buddhi? Knowledge. Knowledge is more powerful than the ignorance in the buddhi. Knowledge of what? Not any kind of knowledge. You already have so much knowledge. Knowledge of cooking, knowledge of computers, knowledge of science, of medicine, etc. But that is not the knowledge we're talking about. We're talking specifically knowledge of your true self as Satchidananda. that knowledge. So we could say finally, yaha saha, that which is buddhehe parataha, that which is more powerful than the buddhi, ultimately is atma, your true self, full and complete. So that completes the verse. So now we know the strategy. The strategy for dealing with the public enemies number 1, 2, and 3. So what is a public enemy? Or what is the strategy? The strategy, actually public enemy 1, 2, 3, and 4. I guess the strategy is start with the ones that are most accessible. I don't know if this metaphor, I like metaphors, you know that, and it's probably, I like them too much. So suppose you worked for the FBI, and you had your list of the public enemies, and of course you know that public enemy one is really protected. I suppose especially if public enemy number one was a drug person in Colombia, you can imagine that person is going to be very well protected, therefore not easy to apprehend. So if you were a little bit more of a pragmatic FBI agent, you might decide to go after enemies that are more available to be captured. Pragmatic. So that's what we're talking about here. Be pragmatic. Go after an enemy that's easier to deal with, and that is our behavior. So where do we start? By controlling our behavior. But that's where we start. That's not where we stop. So that normal, we've talked about normal people and normal behavior, average people, and we said average is only like a grade of C, so it's not very good. But average normal people control their behavior. But we've said in this class several times that average isn't good enough. So instead of merely controlling our behavior, we go to the root cause. So we go from the indriyas to controlling the manas, from controlling the manas to the buddhi, and with the buddhi we can finally address and apprehend, as it were, public enemy number one, and by removing the root problem, the whole thing falls. Like a deck of cards, you pull the card, it's good, I got it in right order. You've all perhaps built a deck of cards. You only have to pull one card out to make that whole thing fall. You find a card at the bottom, you pull that one card out, and the whole thing tumbles to the ground. Very good. That brings us to our last verse in chapter 3. Evam buddhe param buddhva, evam buddhe param buddhva, samstabhyatmanam atmana, samstabhyatmanam. Jahi shatru mahabaho, jahi shatrum. Kamarupam durasaram, kamarupam. Evam, thus, buddhehe param buddhva. Buddhva, having understood that which is param, superior to, more powerful than, buddhehe, the buddhi. Understanding that which is more powerful than the buddhi, that which is superior to the buddhi, I suppose for the sake of completeness, we say atma. As we said, when the buddhi discovers the true nature of atma, we pull that card out from the bottom of the house of cards. So that which is buddhehe param, that which is superior to the buddhi, is atma. Of course, I've got this drawn upside down, but that's the way the chart turned out. So buddhva, understanding, discovering that which is buddhehe param, that which is superior to the buddhi, samstabhya. Atmanam, atmana. Samstabhya, establishing yourself firmly. Establishing yourself firmly. Establishing yourself in what? Atmanam, in your true self. To establish yourself in yourself. What does that mean? It means to recognize, not as a little insight. Usually recognitions begin, especially in the spiritual life, recognitions begin as insights. Insights which flash in your mind and can flash out just as rapidly, like a spark or like a lightning. That lightning is so bright, it's so brilliant, it illumines so much. If you're outside on a dark night, that lightning cracks and you see everything around you, but just for a moment, then the lightning is finished and then you're back into darkness. So early on, insights are like flashes of lightning. They're brilliant, but they're short-lived. Samsthabhya means making it permanent, making it firm, making it deeply established. Samsthabhya, making what established? Atmanam. Your understanding of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. Or to use simple language, the understanding of the true source of joy and love and peace, which is within you. Just very simple language. To discover that. Everyone has insights about it. Everyone has some concept of it. But samsthabhya means to be firmly established in it. To be firmly established means it's your part of your worldview. Every moment of every day, whenever you're involved in anything or engaged with anyone, it's all with the understanding that the true source of joy, peace, and love is within you. With that recognition, you don't feel any dependence on anyone or anything, on any situation. What you discover is complete inner freedom. Samsthabhya, making this very firm, atmanam, that recognition of one's true nature. How will you do that? Atmana, by oneself. This can be frustrating. Again, multiple uses, multiple meanings of words. Establishing yourself by yourself. Does that make any sense? Sounds nice, but you know, from an intellectual standpoint, it doesn't make sense. So atmana is a different use of the word atma. It means by oneself, and specifically with reference to our context, is talking about by means of your intellect. And using your intellect, engaging your intellect, not only to destroy the ignorance, but to establish your thinking very strongly, very firmly, in this vision of yourself, this understanding of yourself as being full and complete. Again, the locus of the problem is in the intellect, locus of the solution is in the intellect. So step one is to get rid of the ignorance, but just a funny image comes. Getting rid of the ignorance sounds like it should be so simple. You just, get rid of that ignorance, done. Mostly ignorance is like that. You get rid of some ignorance and it's done. But I think this is a little bit more like house cleaning. You get rid of dirt in your kitchen and then you're done. For how long? You clean your kitchen. It's clean. You're done. For how long? So oddly enough, you clean your kitchen and before long it needs cleaning again. You clean it again and again and again. We deal with this problem here. Not that ignorance comes back. Ignorance doesn't come back. But our minds are so mired in habitual thinking. The habits come back. Wrong thinking comes back. Wrong conclusions come back. Ignorance doesn't come back. It's not like you gain, if you discover 2 plus 2 is 4, the ignorance of 2 plus 2 is gone, knowledge is present, and the ignorance doesn't return. That's equally true of atmajnanam, of self-knowledge. Ignorance doesn't return, but plenty of other things do return, our habitual patterns of thinking. So that's why samsthabhya, to make it very firm, to make it firmly established, how? Atmana, by repeatedly employing the buddhi, the intellect. It takes ongoing work. By the way, why do we meet every Saturday? In theory, one class should be enough. You come just once. You come to Arsha Bodhi Center, and Swami Taratmananda will say, Tat Tvam Asi. You are that. We're done. Nothing. Why do we have to keep coming back here every Saturday and going through chapter after chapter of Bhagavad Gita when what we're trying to understand is easily understood in three words? Well, actually, big topic, but we can summarize it very, very simply. What we're trying to understand is remarkably simple. In fact, there's nothing more simple than your true nature. Simple in the sense of it has no complexity, doesn't have parts, doesn't have attributes, doesn't have qualities. There's no internal complexity for Atma. Therefore, it's ultimately simple. Then why do we meet Saturday after Saturday? Why does the Bhagavad Gita have 18 chapters? This is only chapter 3. Why do we have 15 more chapters to go through? And the reason is it's in spite of the fact that Atma is the simplest reality. The fact of the matter is that our minds are horribly complex. It's our ignorance that's complex. It's our wrong thinking that's complex. It's the convoluted nature of our minds and intellects that's complex. Because of the complexity of the problem, we require a solution that's adequate for that complexity. Therefore, 18 chapters necessary. Okay. Samstabhya atmanam atmana. So becoming established in this vision of your true self as Satchidananda Atma, atmana, by means of your intellect, in this way, jahi shatrum mahabaho, O mighty Arjuna, jahi shatrum, get rid of this enemy. The context is very interesting. He addresses Arjuna, mahabahu, mighty armed. By the way, there's a verse that describes mighty armed as Ajanu Hasta. Ajanu Hasta means someone whose Hasta reaches up to the Janu is kneecap. Imagine if my hand hung down here, I'd look like an ape, right? But that's the expression, mahabahu, mighty arms are those arms that are so big and long that they extend down to your knees. So, O mighty armed Arjuna, cast off this enemy. How interesting that Arjuna right now is looking across the battlefield, looking at thousands of enemies. He's looking at Duryodhana. He's looking at Dushasana, and he's looking at some beloved family members that, at the time being, are his enemies, including Bhishma and Drona. These, at the moment, are his enemies, and there's some pretty formidable enemies, those of you who know the story well, of the Mahabharata, terribly. Karna! These are the enemies that Arjuna has to meet on a battlefield. Does Sri Krishna say, looking across the battlefield, there's your enemy. Bhishma, your enemy. Duryodhana, your enemy. Karna, your enemy. What does Sri Krishna say? Kama, your enemy. Avidya, your enemy. He doesn't point across the battlefield. He says to Arjuna, the enemy is within you. What a powerful message for life. We all have a tendency to blame others for our suffering. That's common. Can we be very, very clear that the source for our suffering is not any of those people or situations? There is only one reason for our suffering. There's one public enemy number one. The reason for our suffering is within ourselves. So let us resolve then to stop blaming others. Whoever it is, no matter how obnoxious they in and of themselves are not the source of your suffering. Avidya and the desire that comes from avidya is the source of your suffering. So just as Sri Krishna does not point across the battlefield to the enemies, he points within Arjuna in the same way. The message for all of us is the source of our suffering is not outside. The source of our suffering is within. In a way, that's good. Because it's not possible to change other people. It's not possible. The people who make us suffer, do you really think you can change their behavior? Whoever it is making you suffer, if you think you can change them in some substantial way, good luck. I don't think you'll ever be successful. But there's some hope of changing ourselves with the help of these teachings. So therefore, it's kind of good news that the enemy is not outside. The enemy is within. The enemy is accessible. Therefore, Mahabaho, O mighty armed Arjuna, Jahi Shatrum, cast off this enemy, which is Kama Rupam, which is in the form of desire, which is Durasaram, which is a formidable opponent, difficult to put up with, Durasaram, difficult to endure. So Jahi Shatrum, cast off this enemy. So a final observation here. Notice the solution to the problem kind of is a multi-level solution, and we can turn those levels into two. One is a relative level. Relative level means dealing with our bodies, dealing with our minds, dealing with the aspects of our individual selves, and that means dealing with this. So all of this has to do with dealing with the problem at a relative level, dealing with our bodies and minds. But then there's a second level, and that is dealing with the problem in a fundamental way. There's a relative solution to the problem, and there's an ultimate solution to the problem. Vedanta discusses both. Of course, the emphasis of Vedanta is on the ultimate solution, but as we just saw, you won't get to the ultimate solution without first employing the relative solution. This is part of the process, part of the prakriya. Prakriya means methodology. The methodology of Vedanta means you deal with the problems relatively, and then finally you deal with the problem absolutely. And that concludes our study of chapter 4 of chapter 3. We have an ending section. Please listen and repeat. Om Tat Sat, Om Tat Sat, Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishatsu, Upanishads, Brahmavidyayam, Yoga Shastre, Yoga. Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, Karma Yogo Nyama, Karma Yogo, Tritiyo Dhyayaha, Tritiyo Dhyaya. Om Tat Sat, it begins. The Om, this is the truth. Iti, thus, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, in his blessed Bhagavad Gita, Upanishad Su, which contains the teachings of the ancient rishis, Brahmavidyayam, in this teaching of absolute truth, Brahmavidyayam, Yoga Shastre, in this teaching of yoga, Brahmavidya, yoga. Brahmavidya, a absolute, the ultimate solution. Yoga is a relative solution. Yoga Shastre. Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, in his dialogue between Shri Krishna and Arjuna. Karma Yogaha Nama. This is a chapter called Karma Yoga, and it is the Tritiyaha Adhyayaha, the third chapter, and we'll start chapter 4 next time we meet. Before we finish, just to summarize chapter 3, if you remember when we started chapter 3, we read this English verse summary of the chapter. It'd be a nice way to conclude our class today. So these are our verses of the chapter 3 said in English. We can chant them and get the meaning very quickly in summary form. First verse, you can listen and repeat, and then we'll chant together. This is all of chapter 3 in summary form. Arjuna said, if you think wisdom does excel, if you think wisdom does excel, better than acting on desires, better than acting on desires. O Krishna, why then urge me now? O Krishna, why then urge me?
To take part in this awful war, to take part in this awful
together.
Your words seem confusing to me. They appear contradictory. Tell me truly the path for me, by which I gain the highest good. The blessed Lord said, in this world there are but two paths, declared by me so long ago, wisdom for the contemplative, karma yoga for active ones, those who withdraw from worldly acts, yet continue to dwell upon all the pleasures they once enjoyed. Deluded, they live in deceit. But those whose senses are controlled, who work remaining unattached, practicing karma yoga thus, such as they are to be extolled, fulfill your duties as obliged. Deeds are better than idleness. Give up attachment, do your work as a ritual sacrifice. By sacrifice the gods are pleased. When pleased, the gods will strengthen you. Serving each other in this way, you shall obtain the highest good. But those who offer not their gifts, yet enjoy what the gods do grant, they are but thieves incurring sin, acting for their own sakes alone. All your duties you must perform without attachment to the fruits. Work instead for the good of all. Great people gain perfection thus. Many are they who emulate the actions of the wisest ones. So you should labor unattached, working for the sake of the world. All works are done according to one's natural abilities. Yet when ego deludes a mind, one thinks, I did it, I am great. But the wise know all actions are based on God-given qualities. Actions depend upon nature. Thinking thus, they are not attached. Even the wise ones will according to their temperaments. To nature, creatures all conform. Their traits can never be repressed. Likes and dislikes can both arise toward the objects that we perceive. Be not influenced by these two. They indeed are your enemies. Arjuna said, O Krishna, what is it that drives some people to commit a sin, even against their own desires, compelled as if coerced by force? The Blessed Lord said, it is desire, it is rage, ravenous and malevolent, born of passionate tendencies. Know this to be your enemy. Even the wisdom of the wise is eclipsed by this enemy. A raging foe, intense desire, unquenchable like burning fire. Therefore, Arjuna, from the start, all your senses you must restrain. Destroy this demon of desire that robs you of your wisdom's power. And there's all of chapter 3. We've had quite a study. It's gone on for several months. We've learned a lot. There's a lot of importance in every chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So next time we meet, next Saturday, we'll continue with chapter 4. On our website, we've already posted the slides. If you'd like to have your copy of the slides, you can make notes on it or follow along. That's available on our website.
And a couple of closing announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our musical celebration of Janmashtami. We'll have Krishna bhajans and stotras. Please come and join us at 6 p.m. 6 o'clock will be bhajans. We have a gardening project immediately after class today. If you can stay back for a while, we have to clean up this garden right next to us here. And we have some lunch ready for you. So if you can stay back for a while, you can pull some weeds and then have some lunch together. Library will be open after class, and we'll conclude with our prayers.